You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Okay. We did have a request to delay the lunch break slightly because of our food situation. So let's go ahead and continue on, Mr. Wixon. Thank you.
Sir, with respect to this portion of the bone, it looks like there's at least 3 points that you identified where the stabbing action penetrated through the bone, or almost at least one instance.
There were two instances. That was for tool mark A and D, where the damage traveled through the bone.
Is that particular part of the bone relative to other bones? Is it a thicker part, a stronger part, a weaker part? Well, tell us more about that.
My experience with working with this was it was a pretty thick material, but I don't necessarily know if I have enough experience to really opine on that.
Is that outside your scope?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm putting on the screen the state's 180F. Can you please tell the jury what that depicts?
This is an image of an intact spine. So the tool mark that I located on the spine was, you can see it in the box toward the base of the spine. I labeled it as A. So basically, I just started the lettering over, since this was a new evidence item. And the laboratory issued the unique identifier for this piece of evidence as item 17. And right there, it's difficult to see in the image, but that tool mark is actually at a much lower elevation. So the bone at the base of that green arrow is substantially higher in elevation. So the force that was applied onto this this tool mark came, if the image was rotated standing up, it would come from left to right. But it, as this image is being shown here, from the base to the top. So that's how the force was applied. It was from a chopping tap action. And I believe I have another image as a close-up.
Would it be that image?
Yes, sir.
What does that image illustrate for the jury?
That's just a close-up of the same injury, and it was from a chopping tap action.
And on that particular injury, did you identify any tools that would be consistent with having made that chopping tap action?
No, I did not. And actually, I like to clarify, too, that up until this point, all the tool marks that I mentioned for items 16, A through E, I wasn't able to locate any individual characteristics within those injuries. The same for tool mark A here on item 17, the intact spine, no individual characteristics were located in my examination.
So if you will clarify, then you testified earlier on 180B that you found the tool mark to be consistent with having been made by a cleaver, machete, hatchet, or blade. What do you mean now? I'm not sure I follow what you just said.
Oh, it's just, as I mentioned earlier about my examination process, about source identification. So trying to source identify a tool back to a tool mark, in order to make that, I would have to have the microscopic characteristics. Those would be the individual characteristics. In the case of item 16, and in here for item 17, I wasn't able to find those individual characteristics. All I could do was just state that these tool marks were consistent with being produced by these types of tools.
And that distinction being chopping and stabbing tools.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to place states 180G, and if you could please explain to the jury the significance of that photo.
Okay. So a couple of things going on here. This is the item 19, and it's actually the other portion of the hip bone. If you look on the top left or the left side of the hip, you could actually see some black sooting. It appears that a portion of this was actually was in a fire and burnt. There were a number of different tool marks that were located on this item. I'm going to use some different terms. Let me for tool mark, start with D right there. That one was from a chopping action. F, that was, as I mentioned earlier, that's another term called compressive force. So I wasn't actually able to identify any kind of class characteristics from it, nor individual, only that damage was occurred to the bone. And you actually see item F looks like it's kind of within an island. You can see there's a break around the entire thing. So there was enough force to actually break that bone, but not actually break it free from the hip. G was more compressive force. No individual or class characteristics were obtained from that mark. H was from a stabbing tap action. I have some other images of it. I'd like to talk about that one a bit later.
Sir, just for clarity, to go back, you were just mentioning F. Is that the area we were talking about?
Yes, yes, sir, it is.
And that is that injury was a result of compressive force?
Yes, sir.
And can you explain that again? What does that mean?
So compressive force was applied with chopping and stabbing. It's just I use that term to mean that the same force was applied. I was just unable to obtain any class characteristics. So the tool itself, when it imparts those general measurable characteristics, in the case of F and G, no class characteristics were transferred.
And I don't know that I asked, but is this, which item number internally to the FBI would this apply to?
That would be item 19.
Thank you. Excuse me, 180H. Can you please, first of all, which internal FBI number would this photo apply to?
This one still pertains to item 19.
Okay. And please explain in the top photo what we're seeing here.
Okay. Could you just lower it just a tad? Okay, that's perfect right there. Thank you. Okay, so for tool mark A, the green arrow represents the force that was applied. This occurred from a chopping tap action. It came down. It's difficult to see, that chopping action stopped. The elevation at the base of that box is a lot higher, so the force that was applied to it wasn't able to cleave through that bone. I wasn't able to obtain any individual characteristics from it. For tool marks B and C, I labeled these as fractures. I wasn't able to obtain any kind of class characteristics nor individual characteristics, only that some force was applied and it actually fractured a bone. Perhaps even the same blow that was applied to the bone at B and C may have been from a single blow. And it actually cracked or shattered the bone at this point and caused the damage for both B and C.
And are these photos just more close-ups of the B and C we were just talking about?
Yes, you can see in the left side, my green Sharpie. So you can see that's where those fracture points occurred. And then the one on the right, it's just a close-up of one of those fracture points.
States 180I, please tell us what that is. First of all, which FBI item number would that apply to?
This one's still 19, item 19. Could you zoom out a little?
Okay,
so that's good right there. So this is from tool mark D. This was from a chopping tap action. You can see the green arrow there. That's where the force came from. So the force came from, as the image shows it, from kind of the bottom left up. The force, you can kind of see at the top left of the tool mark, you can see that the bone has actually shattered in separate places and fractured. Based on my training experience, it appears that the tool that was used actually cut through the bone and into that soft tissue and may have actually carried into it.
And with that, were you able to identify any particular tool that would have been consistent with that tool mark?
I wasn't able to obtain the individual characteristics. So all I can say was it's consistent with being from a cleaver, a machete, or a hatchet or some type of similar bladed tool.
And what does this photo do to help the jury?
That's just another image. You can kind of see D right there. And you can see the green arrow is showing the force of that blow. There's another tool mark under it. Can we zoom in a little bit? Would it be possible if I could review my notes real quick?
The notes as contained in your lab report?
Yes, sir.
The admitted exhibit? Can you indicate to me what portion of the exhibit, and I'll publish that and let you review?
I was just trying to find the comparable image to this.
Judge, I'm going to object at this point. Is he trying to refresh his recollection, or I'm not sure what the process is here?
Okay, Mr. Halapacki, please let me respond to the objections. We need to clarify that, Mr. Wixom, as to whether or not it's a reference to admitted 423 or whether or not it's a review of notes for refreshing recollection.
Certainly, Your Honor. As I've asked this question, I think he's indicated he does need to refresh, but it would be from an admitted exhibit 423. So I believe that because it's been admitted, he would have the ability to do that with the court's permission.
Yes, he can review the exhibit and either testify from it or about it since it's been admitted.
Thank you. So, sir, you have permission now. Take a moment and identify what you need to refresh, and then you can answer the question.
I see. There was another image that clarifies it for me. So can we zoom? Is there a zoom feature? Not a zoom feature, a focus feature?
There probably is. That doesn't mean I'm smart enough to know how to do it here. Sorry.
Be honest, oh, Mr. Wood.
That's good right there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So the green arrow toward the top, that's the force that's being applied to tool mark D. Underneath it, that's tool mark E. And the green arrow is again shown where that force from that chopping top action is occurring from. And then below that, you can see tool mark F. That's the one I mentioned earlier that was from compressive force. And this is a good illustration. You can see basically it looks like a square. That's basically where the bone has shattered. Again, I wasn't able to obtain any class characteristics from that tool mark. But for D and E, those were both consistent with a chopping tap action. And I was not able to obtain any individual characteristics from those tool marks.
I'm putting up States 180J, and if we could start by you identifying which internal FBI number would apply to that.
Okay. Can we zoom in on the left image?
Is that what you're asking? That were?
Yes. We could zoom in a little more. That's good right there. And maybe focus a little. Oh, that's perfect right there. This is still item 19, and these are tool marks H and G. G was generated using compressive force. I wasn't able to obtain any class characteristics or individual characteristics from tool mark G, other than the fact that some force was applied on it and it caused an impression on the bone. Tool mark H, that was created by a stabbing type action. It's a very small injury. As you can see right there, I took a measurement of it, and it's approximately 0.058 of an inch, so very small. But this injury actually caused a channel to form underneath the bone, that top hard layer of the bone. And if you look at the image on the right, that's just a close-up of tool mark G, and you can see where the shadow is being casted. So you can see the kind of damage that occurred to that part of the bone.
Mr. Halapacki, on back to image H, you said it caused a channel to form?
Yeah, small channel under the bone.
What does that do to your analysis? Why is that significant?
For me, it was a different type of tool, consistent with one of that being of a pick, like an ice pick, but with a very narrow working surface.
Any other observations from that?
No, then no more.
Thank you. 180K.
If it's possible, can we just draw out? I created this this image because I just wanted to reflect the totality of the tool marks. So item 19, item 16, and item 17, they're all there together. I've actually labeled each one of the tool marks that I've already reviewed with you.
Anything else about that exhibit?
No, everything's been covered.
And then 180L.
This is the backside of those same items, item 16, 19, and 17. Again, the tools or the tool marks that I couldn't obtain any kind of class characteristics from, that would be F. You can see that on the top right there, right, item 19, and then C, D, or B and C, that's from that fracturing. And then also A, that's just damage from that stabbing type action. that I talked with about the first tool mark that we reviewed during my testimony. You can kind of see that damage as it's coming through the bone.
You have a note on this. First of all, did you create that notation in the upper left, damage first occurred?
Yes, I did.
What are you telling us there? Why is that significant?
So, and I failed to mention D there. So if you see A in the middle of item 16, if you look to the left, you can see D, and it has that asterisk there. I was just trying to show that damaged area is related to damage that occurred on the front side of the hip bone. But at the same time, enough force was applied that damage could be observed on the back side of that bone.
So is it fair to say from this exhibit, this is the back side of the hip bones? Is that correct?
Yes, the back side of the hip bone and the spine.
Okay. So do the majority of the tool marks occur from the back side of the hip bone or from the front side?
Most occur from the front.
Just one moment, Your Honor. So just because we've gone through a lot of photos and tool marks, I just want to recap. With respect to any of these tool marks, and I'm done publishing, Your Honor.
Okay.
With respect to any of these tool marks, it sounds like some of the items as testified to, you believe came from a chopping force. Is that right?
That's correct. Only two of the tool marks that I mentioned came from a stabbing type action. The majority of them came from chopping type action.
And the chopping, you're saying, are consistent with the cleaver, machete, those types of tools.
And similar bladed tools. That is correct.
And with respect to the stabbing, if I'm correct, you did not identify any particular tools that those would be consistent with.
Other than a single bladed tool or similar type for 16A. And then for the other tool mark, I believe it was on item 19, and that was from a type of a tool similar to like a pick.
And just a last question. Again, assuming you had been provided reference tools to assess, what types of things would you still not have been able to determine even if you had those tools provided to you?
If I had the tools, I would have been able to make test marks, which would have been helpful in narrowing down the tools. However, since I was unable to collect any individual characteristics from either of the bones, I wouldn't have been able to conduct a second level of examination, which is on the microscopic marks, which allow me to identify a tool mark back to a particular tool that I would not have been able to do.
Just one more second, please, Judge.
Yes.
Your Honor, we don't have any further questions at this time.
All right. Counsel, let me have a brief sidebar just regarding scheduling here momentarily. All right. Thanks, Counsel. That will conclude the direct. There was some delay that occurred today with our lunch, so at this time, discussing with counsel, I think it just makes sense. We'll go ahead and allow for cross at this time. And then once we conclude with this witness, we will have our lunch recess. So go ahead, Mr. Pryor.
Sir, you wrote in your report that you're really unable to make a source conclusion on a lot of these items. Would that be fair?
That's correct. I wasn't able to make any source determinations.
And let's clarify what you mean by source determination.
A source determination is when using the tool marks that I'm able to identify the tool marks back to a particular tool.
Okay. And how does individual characteristics play into that?
That they're critical. Without the individual characteristics, it's not possible to render a source determination.
And in this case, there were no individual characteristics as well. Would that be fair?
No, that is correct. There were no individual characteristics.
And then class characteristics, define that again for me.
Class characteristics are those general or measurable features of a specimen. Class characteristics are determined prior to manufacture. They're design factors. And these are the characteristics that are used to generate different populations. So they're the first half of the examination process.
Different varieties of potential tools. Would that be a simpler way to put that?
They allow me to actually put the different tool marks into the different populations.
Okay.
That is correct.
And you put in your report that tool mark identification is an empirical science, and it relies on objective measurements and a subjective comparison. Would you agree with that as still?
That's correct. So the objective part of the examination is those class characteristics. Those are documenting the general and the measurable features during the class characteristics. So that's the objective. The subjective part is doing the microscopic examination, and that's while using those individual characteristics. And again, I was never actually able to get to that part of the examination process.
So when you say you weren't able to get to an individual characteristics, part of your analysis basically stopped at the objective, and you really couldn't make any distinctive determination of exactly what caused any of these marks. Wouldn't that be fair?
I wasn't able to identify it back to a particular tool. That is correct.
Okay. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. Any redirect?
One question, Your Honor, if I may.
Go ahead, once you're ready.
So, sir, in your analysis, is there any question that some kind of tool was used to injure Tylee and her bones?
Absolutely. Yeah, a tool was used to cause that those tool marks. That is true. I just wasn't able to render any kind of source identification on those tool marks. That is correct.
No more questions, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. That'll conclude the testimony then, Mr. Kalapaska. We'll go ahead and take our lunch recess. Can he be excused and released from any subpoena?
Actually, Your Honor, we would like to him kept under subpoena. He may be a rebuttal witness.
Okay. So with that in mind, then, there is a court exclusionary order. The prosecution can further explain that. You may be required to ask or answer some questions on viewing testimony that may not apply depending on the context of your testimony and whether it falls as an expert witness or not. So I'll leave that up to the state to advise him. With that in mind, then, thank you for appearing and testifying this morning. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take the lunch recess. We had that additional break this morning, so if we can, hopefully we can do lunch in under an hour today, perhaps. Let's try to get back at about 1:15 or 1:20, if that works for council.
All rise, please.
Thank you. Mr. Bailiff, we'll have the jurors brought in, please.
Jury's present and accounted.
Thank you. Please be seated. Okay, we're back on the record on CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Dabo. Continuing with the state's case in chief, the state may call its next witness.
Thank you. The state would call Nick Balance.
Swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help God.
Right into the mic, you have one over there, and you have a nice point there.
Okay, thanks, sir. All right, thank you. Agent Balance has been sworn, is recalled, and previously testified in the case, but I'll ask the witness, have you viewed any of the trial testimony that's taken place since you were last here?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Have you talked to anyone else about your about their testimony or your previous testimony?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you for that. Mr. Wood, you can inquire.
Thank you. And before I do, Your Honor, I had notified the clerk earlier that I would be requesting State's Exhibit 156.
Very well.
Good afternoon, Agent.
Good afternoon, sir.
And as a reminder, can you restate your name for the record?
Yes, sir. It's Nicholas Balance, Balance spelled B-A-L-L-A-N-C-E.
And an agent is the proper?
Yes, sir. That's fine.
Okay. All right. If you could just, you've testified already, but if you could briefly remind the jury what your occupation is.
I'm a supervisory special agent with the FBI, and I'm assigned specifically to a group known as the Cellular Analysis Survey Team, or CAST.
All right. And just briefly, again, what does CAST do?
CAST briefly is looking at records that are maintained by a provider and then placing those records onto a map. It's kind of the most general sense of what I do whenever I'm doing an analysis.
And Your Honor, if I may publish from 156.
You may.
So Agent, just briefly, when you were here last time, we discussed a couple of dates. September 9th, September 23rd, and a few other things as well, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Agent, do you recognize what's on the screen?
I do.
Is this part of the report that we spoke about earlier?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. And does this report also cover dates throughout October?
It does, yes, sir.
Okay. And some other dates as well, correct?
Yes, sir.
Can you describe what the jury is seeing on slide 58 and why it was important to your investigation?
So this was a receipt that was provided to me that was associated with a telephone number 401-569-8260 that had a bill to name listed as Boyd Dial.
And why was the name Boyd Dial significant to you?
I saw that as the subscriber across numerous telephone numbers that were later attributed to Chad Daybell.
So when you see the name Boyd Dial, do you associate that with Mr. Daybell?
Yes, correct.
And what is the date on this point of purchase information?
You can see it there at the top right. I don't know if the pointer is showing on the white, but it's the October the 8th, 2019 at 2:56 p.m.
And are you aware of what this is a receipt for?
I would defer to AT&T for the specifics, but I've definitely seen them before associated with changes made to an account.
Okay. And if you can inform the jury, what's significant about slide 59 in your investigation?
So this is showing a return from TracFone, which is a company that provides wireless service. They just are what's known as a mobile virtual network operator, meaning that they don't have towers. So they rely on one of the larger providers that have a cellular infrastructure in order to carry calls on their network. So one of the things that we can obtain from TracFone is what's called point of purchase information. So if you were to go to Walmart and purchase a TracFone, they would have the information associated with that purchase and certain pieces of information associated with it. So as an example, this is the point of purchase information for the telephone number 334-744-4205. And then as you look across the information that's provided from TracFone, you'll see that the merchant was Walmart, which would be where it was purchased from. You can see the amount, which is going to be the cost associated with the phone. And then over on the far right, you can also see the time associated with the purchase. On the bottom, you'll see the actual address of the Walmart where it was purchased, as well as the phone number associated with that Walmart. And then TracFone point of purchase information, the time is stored in Eastern Standard Time. So because of that, since this purchase was made in Rexburg, Idaho, I had to deduct 2 hours, which went from 1724 to 324 as the actual time that the purchase was made.
And you mentioned the phone number for which this point of purchase information is associated with, correct?
Yes, correct.
And can you read that number again?
Certainly. It's 334-744-4205.
Are you aware of who that number is associated with?
Yes, that number was attributed to Alex Cox.
We spoke before about the homerjmaximus@gmail.com account. Can you briefly remind the jury who that account belonged to?
Sure. The homerjmaximus@gmail, actually the account information listed Alex Cox as being associated with that account. And then also one of the things that I spoke about previously was that the location history would be associated with a device on that account. And so all the location history that was found on the homerjmaximus@gmail account, at gmail.com account, was associated with the Alex Cox number ending 9120.
And on slide 60, what is the jury seeing here?
So here, this is the address associated with the previous slide that showed the point of purchase information, the Walmart that's located in Rexburg. And then it is location information that was stored by Google associated with Alex Cox's account. So if you look at the summary box on the left side, you'll see that there were 18 Google locations that were logged via Wi-Fi, and then one that was associated with the GPS for a total of 19. And then all of them are placed in and around the Walmart in Rexburg between the time of 2:59 p.m. and 3:37 p.m.
There is a blue box in the upper right-hand corner. Can you read that?
Yes. This says does not include all activity between 2:59:59 and 3:37:02. Only locates with 100 meters or less margin of error are depicted.
And if you can just briefly remind the jury, what is the margin of error when we're talking about these location hits?
So the center point of where each one of those blue Wi-Fi locations is, and then on the bottom left where the GPS is, the margin of error is basically 100 meters out in a circular pattern from the center point of where those icons are on the map. So each one that's listed has different margins of error associated with it. But what I did was I only looked at during that time frame 100 meters or less for the margin of error.
And why is it that you only looked at location hits with the margin of error of 100 meters or less?
That was the number I chose kind of at the beginning of this case, just to ensure that anytime we had locates, the precision would be based on a objective number versus just kind of picking what margin of error I wanted for a specific day.
In slide 61, can you tell the jury what they're looking at?
So here you're looking at Verizon text message content associated with the phone number 208-690-9374, which you can see in the actual return there as the originating MDN or mobile device number. And then you can see the same thing in the second message here. So what these are returns from Verizon that are showing text message content or a text message that was sent associated with that account. The first one at 11:57 listed here, again, they're listed in East Coast time. So I had to subtract 2 hours. So the adjusted time is at the top. You'll see 9:57:51. That's associated with the top message that reads, gonna stop by the store right now to get that other number working. Hopefully won't take long.
And Agent, you mentioned the number that these two text messages were sent from. What was that number again?
So that number is 208-690-9374.
And who is that number associated with?
Chad Daybell.
Okay. And if you can explain what you see in that second white box.
So the second, same thing. It's a text message that originated from the number ending 9374 associated with Chad Daybell. And the content reads, I will call right now from a 401 number.
And do those boxes include who's receiving that, those messages?
They do. So if you look below, you'll see the terminating MDN. And so both of these messages went to 808-755-5452.
And are you familiar with who that number is associated with?
I am.
Who is that?
That's associated with Lori Vallow.
Okay. And so what we have is a message saying he will be calling from a 401 number, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you explain to the jury what they're seeing on slide 62?
So this is going back to looking at how I would map interactions with a cellular network. And just to refresh, since it's the first one in a couple weeks, you can see my legend at the bottom left will show the telephone number and who it was associated with. And then the mapping to the right will show in the blue the specific number ending in 8260 associated with Chad Daybell. And then the 9374 number also associated with Chad Daybell just in the green. And then you see the call boxes that are pointed to the specific tower and sector that was being used for that interaction and the information associated with it. So for the 8260 number, you see an interaction at 1027, which was an outbound call to 808-755-5452, which is associated with Lori Vallow. And then you also see the other phone ending 9374 associated with Chad Daybell receiving an incoming call from a number that I don't recognize.
So I'm going to go back one slide. Well, actually, I'm going to call your attention again to this, to the blue box in the middle of the screen. It's an outgoing call with the 401 number, correct?
Yes, sir. Correct.
And just again, if you could just briefly summarize what it says here on the on this second box.
Sure. So it's an outbound text at 10:26:35 that reads, I will call right now from a 401 number.
And what time did that message go out?
That was at 10:26 and 35 seconds.
And then this phone call, what time did that go out?
That went out at 10:27 and 14 seconds.
From a 401 number?
Yes, sir, correct.
You can explain what the jury's seeing on slide 63.
So this is looking at drive test data associated with the two towers and sectors that were utilized on the previous page. So the blue is going to be associated with the AT&T, and then red would be associated with the Verizon tower.
And is this related to the last slide we just looked at?
It is. So at that time, you can see the WR icon, which is Wireless Revolution LLC, which if you go back to the receipt from October the 8th, that's the location of that store.
Okay. Before we move on, Agent, we spoke last time about some types of records that Verizon does not keep. Are there specific records they do not keep in regards to text messages?
Yes. During the time period that these reports were generated, Verizon did not include the cell site and sector associated with text messages. So basically what that means is if a Verizon customer sends a text message, you're not able to see what tower and sector is used in Verizon's call detail records.
Thank you. And then slide 64, what are we seeing here?
So this is showing the other side of the calls that were shown previously. And it's showing the location of the 4652 phone, as well as the 5452 phone, both attributed to Lori Vallow. And they're using towers and sectors consistent with being down just outside of Phoenix, southeast of Chandler, Arizona.
And are these related to the 401 phone call that we saw on the other slide?
Yes, sir. Correct.
In slide 65, what are we seeing here?
So this is just showing on the same date additional use of the number ending 8260 and the number ending 9374 associated with Chad Daybell.
And on slide 66, what are we seeing?
The same as previously, just additional use. This is between 1:11 p.m. and 2:22 p.m. of the 9374 phone and the 8260 phone, both associated with Chad Daybell.
And in this box that I'm moving the mouse over, can you go down through and tell the jury what's going on in there? What devices are communicating with which device?
Sure. So if you're looking at the top box, again, I know the white's not very clear, but the first is an incoming call that was received at 1:11 from the 4652 phone associated with Lori Vallow. So Lori Vallow is calling into the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell. And that call is 513 seconds, which is about a little less than 10 minutes. And then you see text messages being exchanged between the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell and the 4205 number associated with Alex Cox.
I mean, what is the date that these exchanges were taking place?
That's October the 9th between 1:11 p.m. and 2:22 p.m.
And Agent, I know it's hard to see on the big screen, but if you can look on your monitor, this label here, what is that?
So that's going to be the Rexburg, Idaho Temple.
And so is that location consistent with the call records and cellular data for the ingoing and outgoing for that 401 number?
Based on just looking at this page, I would say yes, but I also did the drive testing as well. So that would be a more clear indicator versus an estimate.
Okay. And the red box, what is that detailing?
So that's associated with a Verizon tower, and that's three calls made by the 9374 phone associated with Chad Daybell.
And if you can explain to the jury what they're seeing on slide 67.
Sure. So this is just looking at the two AT&T towers and sectors that were highlighted on the previous page, and then what the coverage looks like from a zoomed out perspective.
And if you can just use the pointer to show the jury where you're referring to.
Sure. So these two towers and sectors here, and then the coverage areas in green and in red. So as you can see, the green does actually go up north of Chad Daybell's residence. and then the red goes out west, kind of on the outskirts of Rexburg.
And is this the same thing, but zoomed in?
It is.
If you can just describe that a little bit with the jury, what you can tell from that data.
It's just easier to see because now you can look at actual locations in Rexburg and whether or not coverage was in that area. And you can also see the overlapping coverage that's going to be that darker green color, which would indicate that both of those towers and sectors would provide coverage to those locations. And going back to the previous question, the Rexburg Idaho Temple is in an overlapping coverage area right there.
And what is the jury seeing on slide 69?
So the previous slides were looking at AT&T coverage. This is looking at Verizon coverage. Only one tower and sector was used during the time frame previously. So this is just showing what the Verizon coverage looks like for that tower and sector.
And is that relatively in the same area?
Yes, it is. That tower is just southeast of Rexburg.
And on slide 70?
Just another zoomed in view to where you can see actual locations within Rexburg that tower and sector would provide coverage to.
On slide 70, and again, if you can tell us the date of the information on this slide and then describe what the jury's seeing on slide 71.
Sure. So we're looking at October 9th of 2019 between 12 o'clock and 29 seconds and 1:23 p.m.
And what is the data that's being displayed?
So this is all the Google location history during that time. And so I show 18 Google locations reported via Wi-Fi for Alex Cox's Google account. And they are all consistent with being at Lori Vallow's residence during that time.
And just, Agent, is there a reason you looked at the geolocation and cellular data for October 9th of 2019?
I was asked to look at that due to an attempted assault on Tammy Daybell that occurred that day.
And if you can explain for the jury what they're seeing on slide 72.
So here we're looking at October 9th at 1:05 p.m. And this is from the Homer J. Maximus Gmail account. Google also, if you opt in to have your search history maintained, then that would be stored associated with the account. So this is one of the search items that was made from Alex Cox's Google account, one of the searches that was made.
And why was that search significant to you?
So it was a search for Auburn, Alabama zip code. And so the phone number mentioned previously that was associated with Alex Cox from the track phone that was purchased at Walmart, it had a Auburn, Alabama area code.
And what do we see on slide 73?
So again, this is looking at Google location history associated with Alex Cox's Google account, showing that the device moved between 1:23 and 0 seconds to 1:23 and 32 seconds, consistent with going from Lori Vallow's apartment to Alex Cox's apartment.
And slide 74.
Showing from 1:23 p.m. to 2:37 p.m., Google location history associated with Alex Cox's account, consistent with being at Alex Cox's residence.
And to clarify for the jury, and you may have already said this, but the Homer J. Maximus at Gmail information you obtained, was that on multiple devices?
No. So the location history was only turned on one device, and that was the number ending 9120.
And so is that a different number than the number we just spoke about that had the Auburn, Alabama area code?
Yes, sir, it is.
And slide 75.
Showing on October the 9th between 2:37 and 2:40, Google location history from Alex Cox's account, consistent with movement to the northwest away from Alex Cox's apartment.
And slide 76.
Showing from 2:42 p.m. to approximately 3:14 p.m., Google location history associated with Alex Cox's account, consistent with traveling from Rexburg down towards Idaho Falls.
And if you can point out the different areas that are on your legend.
Sure. So up top, you can see different addresses of interest that were up in Rexburg. And then you can see GPS and Wi-Fi consistent with travel down to Idaho Falls. And this SW, which is the Sportsman's Warehouse in Idaho Falls.
What do we see on slide 77?
So this, again, is Google location history associated with Alex Cox's account on October the 9th between 3:42 and approximately 4:12 p.m., consistent with being in the area of the Sportsman's Warehouse.
I mean, what city was that Sportsman's Warehouse in?
That was down in Idaho Falls.
And what do we see on slide 78?
So again, this is showing on October the 9th from approximately 4:47 to 5:56 p.m. Google location history associated with Alex Cox's account. The first at 4:47 is showing around Highway 20. I think that's 1900. I forget the name of the road, this north-south there. But consistent with traveling from that intersection up towards the area of Chad Daybell's residence, and then also consistent with going east from Chad Daybell's residence back over towards Highway 20.
And so, and just to be clear, is it the timeline? Can you just point at the different boxes, the different times?
Sure. So we have at 4:47 p.m., the first location that I spoke about, continuing northbound 4:49 p.m., up in the area of Chad Daybell's residence at 4:51. And then these two over here by Highway 20 are at 4:55 and 4:56.
And again, does this cover all the data or only within a specific margin of error?
So again, this goes back to my number where I only used locates that were 100 meters or less margin of error.
And then on slide 79, what do we see?
So this is looking at the time window of October the 9th from approximately 4:57 p.m. to 5:03 p.m. Google location history associated with Alex Cox, the first being at 4:57 in the area of Highway 20, and then consistent with going westbound, and then another one that is south of that at 5:03 p.m.
And the location at 5:03, there's an SC right above that. What does the SC stand for?
That represents Salem Church.
And from your knowledge, is the Salem Church on the same road that Chad Daybell's residence is?
Yes, sir, it is.
You know approximately the distance between the two locations?
Approximately 2.5 miles.
And what do we see on slide 80?
So this is looking at Google location history associated with Alex Cox. October the 9th from approximately 5:16 p.m. till approximately 11:53 p.m. the same day.
And so does that device appears to be stationary?
Yeah, that's the device associated with the number ending 9120, consistent with being in the area of Alex Cox's apartment.
Until 11:53 at night?
Yes, correct.
Can you tell us what we see on slide 81?
So this is looking at cellular interactions between the 8260 number associated with Chad Daybell and the AT&T network, utilizing two different towers and sectors that both provide coverage to the Daybell residents. And then looking at starting at approximately 5:28, text messages that are exchanged between the 8260 number associated with Chad Daybell and the 4652 phone number associated with Lori Vallow, as well as text messages exchanged with the number ending 4205 associated with Alex Cox.
And that 4205, that is the number with an Auburn area code, correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct. That's the 334 number.
And when was that line activated?
That was purchased on October the 8th. And I can't remember when the first phone call actually was made with that line.
But just the day before?
Correct.
And this 401-569-8260 number, when was that? When did activity begin on that number?
The activity for data exchanges on the network began on October the 8th, but the first text message was on October the 9th.
Okay. So both this, the 8260 number associated with Mr. Daybell and this number with the Auburn area code associated with Mr. Cox, they were both activated within this same time frame of between the 8th and 9th of October 2019.
That's correct.
Okay. If you can go to this box and describe the activity that's going on there between the numbers that are shown.
Those are four outbound texts sent from the 8260 number associated with Chad Daybell to the 4205 number associated with Alex Cox. 713, two at 713, one at 835, and then one at 843.
Okay. And I know it's a little tedious, but if you could do the same thing on the second box, the numbers that are being texted to and with the times?
Sure. I'm not going to be able to point and read, but I'll go through them. So the first at 5:28 is an outbound SMS. 8260 associated with Chad Daybell sends a message to 4652 associated with Lori Vallow. And then there is back and forth, both with 4652 at 5:52 and again at 6:03. And then there are four text messages exchanged between 8260 associated with Chad Daybell and 4205 associated with Alex Cox, starting at 7:30 and continuing through 8:38. Then there's another text message sent from the 8260 associated with Chad Daybell to the 4652 associated with Lori Vallow at 9:30. And then there are two more text messages between the 4205 associated with Alex Cox, and then one more text message sent to the 4652 associated with Lori Vallow.
That's on October 9th, correct?
Correct.
I'm going to speak with you about October 18th. Are you aware through your investigation, did you look at information regarding October 18th in your investigation?
I did.
Why was that?
I'd received information from the investigative team that Tammy Daybell was found deceased sometime between the late hours of October 18th and early morning hours of October the 19th.
What do we see on slide 83?
So this is showing the use of the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell on October the 18th between 10:40 and 11:22 a.m. The first use is at approximately 10:40, which would be of a tower that would provide coverage to the Daybell residence, sending an outgoing SMS to the 4205 number associated with Alex Cox, and then use of a tower down in Rexburg at 11:21, an outbound call to Lori Vallow's number ending in 4652.
What do we see on slide 84?
So the usage of two phones, both associated with Chad Daybell, the 8260, as well as the 9374, on October the 18th between 11:21 a.m. and 12:11 p.m., consistent with both phones being down in the area of Rexburg.
And do you recognize the number on the red box that the outgoing call goes to?
I do not.
Okay. What do we see on slide 85?
This is Google location history associated with Alex Cox on October the 18th between approximately 11:02 and 12:20, consistent with that device being at Lori Vallow's apartment.
And that's from the Homer J. Maximus geolocation data, correct?
That's correct.
And slide 86.
So this is showing the use of the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell, utilizing a tower and sector that provide coverage to the Daybell residence. And there are two outbound texts, one incoming text. All of those are exchanged with the Lori Vallow phone ending 4652.
And on slide 87, what do we see?
So the same thing, the 8260 phone's interaction with the AT&T network, utilizing two different towers and sectors that provide overlapping coverage to the Daybell residence on October the 18th. Between 1:36 p.m. and 8:54 p.m. And so these are all, there's one voice call and the rest are text messages. And the two numbers that those exchanges are occurring with are the 4652 Lori Vallow phone and then the 4205 Alex Cox phone.
And in this second box, it looks like there's one with that Alex Cox phone. What time was that at?
So I see an 8:44, an outbound text to the 4205 Alex Cox phone.
If you can tell us what we see in slide 88.
So again, this is going to show interactions between the 8260 phone and the AT&T network, the 8260 phone being associated with Chad Daybell, utilizing two different towers and sectors that both provide coverage to the Daybell residence. And these are going to be all text messages back and forth with the 4205 number associated with Alex Cox.
And I understand it's a bit tedious. In this first box, can you read the times of those messages?
Sure. So we have 9:35 and incoming from the 4205 associated with Alex Cox. Is it okay if it's all right with the court? I'll just say whether it's an incoming or outgoing, since they're all associated with the 4205.
There's no objection. That's fine by me.
It's fine.
Okay, so you have at 9:35 an incoming, at 10:12 an outgoing, another one at 10:12 that is an incoming, a 10:23 that is an outgoing, and then it's going to switch over to the other box, but I'll just read the one on the left instead of jumping back and forth.
Okay.
10:40 incoming, 10:53 incoming, 10:54 outgoing, and then switching to the other tower and sector, 10:28 incoming, 10:32 outgoing, 10:33 incoming, 10:39 an outgoing, 10:53 an outgoing, another incoming at 10:53, and then an outgoing and an incoming both at 10:54. Four. Yes, ma'am.
And all these messages, these are those numbers we spoke about earlier, correct, that were activated between the 8th and the 9th?
Yes, specifically to this page. Yeah. They are.
And all these messages were between 9:35 p.m. and 10:55 p.m.
Correct.
And just to be clear, on October 18th of 2019.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Can you tell us what we see on slide 89?
This is looking at Google location history associated with Alex Cox between 10:05 and 10:07, consistent with movement from Rexburg up towards the area of the Salem Church. So the first GPS location reporting to Google is going to be at 10:05 down in the area of Highway 20 and Salem Road. And then the second is at 10:07 in the area of the Salem Church.
And that's the Homer J. Maximus associated with Alex Cox?
Yes, sir. Correct.
And so at the Salem Church, the time that hit is at 10:07 p.m.?
Yes, sir. Correct.
And what do we see in slide 90?
So this is zoomed in a little bit more on the Salem Church, and it's showing Google location history associated with Alex Cox between approximately on October the 18th, between approximately 10:07 and 10:45 p.m. And so there's 12 locations that are reported via Wi-Fi and one that's reported via GPS. And again, the 10:07, which was mentioned on the previous page, reported via GPS there. And then the other Wi-Fi locations are reported around the Salem Church.
And can you tell us what we see on slide 91?
Sure. This is looking at interactions between the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell and the AT&T network, utilizing a tower and sector that provides coverage to the residents, the Chad Daybell residents, excuse me. And there are three outbound text messages that are sent to the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla.
And what do we see on slide 92?
So this is associated with the 9120 phone attributed to Alex Cox, an interaction with the Verizon network, making an outbound call to the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla, utilizing a tower and sector that would provide coverage kind of southwest Rexburg. And that call is approximately, it's 977 seconds. So approximately 16 minutes and 17 seconds, if I did my math right.
So that's a call from a number associated with Alex Cox to a number associated with Lori Valla?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. And this is down in the general Rexburg area. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And so just for timing, I'm going to go back two slides. What was the last known time that the Homer J. Maximus account was located at the Salem Church?
That was at approximately 10:45 and 26 seconds p.m.
Okay. And this device on slide 92 that we were just talking about, that phone call to Lori Valla, that device that it was, the phone call was made from, the 9120, that's the device associated, that's the device that you obtained Homer J. Maximus information from, correct?
Yes, correct. So in order to see Google location history, the only device that was reporting Google locations was the device associated with 9120.
What do we see on slide 93?
So this is the other side of the call that was indicated in the previous page. So this is the 4652 phone receiving that call from the 9120 phone. and utilizing a tower and sector consistent with being in Hawaii.
And slide 94.
So this is showing Google location history starting at 11:54. And that Google location history, again, is associated with Alex Cox's account. Starting October 18th, approximately 11:54, and continuing through October the 19th at approximately 12:09 a.m., consistent with travel from Rexburg down towards Idaho Falls. So the location that you see here at 11:54 is consistent with being just south of Rexburg. And then the location at 12:09 in the morning the following day is consistent with being just north of Idaho Falls.
And an agent, based on the information you're aware of, what day was Tammy Daybell reported dead?
So that would have been sometime between the late hours of October 18th and the early morning hours of October the 19th.
Turn your attention to October 22, 2019. Are you aware of any event that took place that day?
Yeah, I believe the investigative team had informed me that that was the date of Tammy Daybell's funeral.
And what do we see on slide 96?
So this is showing use of the 8260 phone associated with Chad Daybell, as well as use of the 9374 phone, also associated with Chad Daybell, on October the 22nd, 2019. Between 1:46 p.m. and 4:17 p.m. Those are both on two separate networks. 8260 is associated with AT&T. 9374 is associated with Verizon. But all of the usage is consistent with being in and around the area, just outside of Provo. I think it was Springville, if I remember correctly.
Okay. And in those blue boxes, the number, the 8260 number associated with Mr. Daybell, what number is he communicating with?
So those are all text messages, both inbound and a couple of outbound with the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla.
And on slide 97, what is the jury saying?
So this is just a repeat of a lot of the information that was on the previous page, zoomed in to show that both the AT&T network, which is indicated in blue, and then the green, which is the Verizon network, are both providing coverage in and around the area of the Evergreen Cemetery, as well as the Holiday Inn.
And the 401 or the 8260 number associated with Mr. Daybell, who was that communicating with?
Again, it's a repeat from the previous, and it's showing communication with the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla.
Agent, were you asked with looking at any other cellular data information in this case?
I was.
And what was that?
I was asked to look at the usage of Tylee Ryan's phone and any time that it was used in a similar area that the Lori Valla phone was used.
And did you find times when that occurred?
I did. I found several instances.
What do we see in slide 99?
So this is showing use of the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla and the 9612 phone associated with Tylee Ryan, using towers consistent with being out in northeast Kansas.
And just for clarity's sake, through your investigation, are you aware of the last known sighting of Tylee Ryan?
I was.
And when was that?
That was in September of 2019.
In slide 100, what are we saying?
So this is looking at October the 16th. This is usage in Rexburg of both the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla and the 9612 phone associated with Tylee Ryan between 12:26 and 12:35 p.m.
And so is the purpose of this slide just to show that Tylee Ryan's phone is still getting used?
Yes, correct.
And again, slide 101.
This is showing just usage of Tylee Ryan's phone on October the 24th at approximately 6:29 in the morning on the outskirts of Phoenix, Arizona.
And 102, what are we seeing there?
This is showing two separate days. So it's showing the 4652 phone associated with Lori Valla being utilized on November the 5th, 2019, using a tower and sector consistent with being in Hawaii, and then use of the 9612 phone associated with Tylee Ryan on November the 4th at approximately 10:15, utilizing a tower and sector that would provide coverage out in Hawaii.
And again, is the purpose of this just to show that Ty Ryan's phone was in the same location as, same general location as Lori Vallis?
I don't object at this point. It's testifying. Counsel's testifying.
Sustain.
What was the purpose of this slide?
This was basically just to show if Lori Vallow's phone and Tylee Ryan's phone were consistently together after she was believed to be deceased.
And on slide 103.
This is again use of the 9612 phone associated with Tylee Ryan on December the 15th at approximately 12:25 p.m. and using a tower and sector out in Hawaii.
And we actually, slide 104, we briefly went over this on the last day you testified, other than the last date, which was October 15th. Can you tell us about what you found on October 15th?
So again, this was just looking at any times that the Google account associated with Alex Cox had location information consistent with being in the area of the Chad Daybell residence. And so this was showing that on October the 15th, between 141 and 152, six locations reported via Wi-Fi consistent with being in the area of the Chad Daybell residence.
And again, did you limit those, what margin of error did you limit those searches to?
Those were still based on 100 meters or less of margin error.
And Your Honor, at this time, I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wood. Once you're ready, Mr. Pryor, crossing.
No questions, Judge.
All right. That will conclude the testimony then of Agent Vallis. So you're going to be recalled potentially again?
Your Honor, we'd keep him under subpoena, potential rebuttal, but we don't plan on calling him again.
Okay. Well, you are still subject to the exclusionary order then, Agent Vallis, since you are potentially going to be recalled or under subpoena still. So for that reason, I'll advise you not to observe any future testimony of this trial because it is being live streamed and available to the public.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you for coming in to testify today.
Thank you, sir.
Your Honor, if we just have a brief sidebar.
Yes. All right. At this time, let's inquire from the state. I understand that some of your witnesses may have gone a little more quickly than you were anticipating today. Where do we stand in terms of your next witness you'd like to call?
Thank you, Your Honor. The state would just note at this time, we normally take a break during the day. And rather than do that, we would just propose that we end early today and pick back up in the morning.
Okay. And you'll have a witness ready to go at 8:30?
Yes, we will.
And can you tell us who that? Well, tell me after the fact if you'd like.
That's okay. It'll be Dr. Marsden.
Okay. Thank you. Just for our preparation. All right. We will go ahead. Given the nature of scheduling today with your witnesses, we are going to conclude for today. So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, thank you for your attendance today. Thank you, those in attendance, for obeying the court's conduct order. Please follow the court's admonishing instruction to not research the case in any way. Avoid any media exposure to it that you can, and don't discuss the case or facts of the case amongst yourselves or with anyone else. We'll return for additional evidence tomorrow morning, and that will conclude evidence for today.
All rise, please.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.